just between us.
Hey!
Just between us.
Hey!
I'm Allison Raskin. I'm a writer, mental health advocate, and my face turns kind of red easily.
Hey, I'm Gabe Dunn. I'm a writer, bicon, bisexual icon, wink, and I love a mug.
Yeah, you do love a mug.
Love mugs. Big fan. Collect them.
What do you think about when they give you a hot beverage in a glass?
The worst. You know, I made... Do you actually say this to set me off?
No.
Because I made an Instagram post about this.
Really?
Yes. And I said, who can I call in city council to get this banned in Los Angeles? The hot beverage in a glass mug. Are you kidding me? You burn your hands. It hurts your hands. Then you try to put your fingers through the hole. And I understand what I said. And
what
then hole? The handle. And then your little knuckles brush the fucking hot.
Well, I'm talking. Sometimes they give it to you in a glass without even a handle.
Jail. Absolute jail. ACAB, but hello, 911.
Well, this is just between us, a variety show filled with heartfelt advice,
ridiculous games,
and brutal honesty.
I'll call OSHA.
Okay.
I'll be like, I'll report you to the health services. Better Business Bureau.
Yeah, better.
Yelp.
Okay. Are you done?
Yeah, I'm done.
Well, we have a very fun episode for everyone today.
We're going to be talking to Adam Alexic all about etymology. He's etymology nerd on Instagram and TikTok, and it's one of my favorite things to follow, and I love linguistics, so I'm very excited.
And Gabe tried to really flirt with him at the end.
He was given nothing. That's fine.
And later, we're going to be talking about philanthropy and why more billionaires should do it.
Yeah. Up next, we have an exciting interview with our highly esteemed guest, Adam Alexic, so stay tuned.
Just between us.
Welcome back to Just Between Us. It's time for the juiciest, most scandalous, most controversial segment known to all of podcasting, Tough Questions.
This week on the show, we have Adam Alexic, who is known online as the Etymology Nerd, a linguist focused on bringing the scientific study of language to a broad audience, aka one of my favorite follows on Instagram. Hi.
Hello. Nice to be here.
Gabe has been talking about you nonstop for weeks. We're really excited to get into this.
Thank you.
So how did you start out with linguistics?
Yeah, it started in high school. I was in a bookstore, just randomly came across this book, The Etymologicon by Mark Forsyth. Highly recommend it for anybody like even mildly interested in linguistics because it's a very accessible read. But it's this fantastic book that kind of was took this circular dive into the English language and showed me how all these like crazy words are connected. And that was the first time, I guess, I started thinking about how there are all these secret stories behind words. And that was really compelling to me. So after reading that book, I started, you know, self-studying a lot of etymology. And then I studied linguistics in university. Later on, I was graduating with a linguistics degree and I was like, what do I do now? So I started trying to make linguistics content, and that's sort of the origin story.
What would you define as etymology? Like, how would you define that?
Academically, I would say etymology is the study of word origins, where words come from. A little more philosophically, etymology is the study of truth. It comes from the Greek word etymos, meaning truth. And I think that's also really cool because it shows that there's like a hidden truth inside the word. You just dig a little bit deeper.
It feels like a cool time to be studying this because I feel like with social media and things, like our language is changing pretty rapidly. Like people are, I don't know, like getting out like slang terms, like just like people are picking up on them faster. And like, what are your thoughts around like people that think that language is something that is stuck in a certain time, that there's certain ways to speak and that our the way we speak shouldn't change?
Well, people have been always thinking that for millions or thousands of years, and those people always die out, and then language does change. So they can't really do anything about it. It's always evolving. It does evolve along the same historical patterns, like the same kind of slang we're seeing. Somehow you can explain it using old etymological processes, which is always really exciting to me to be able to have that lens. I do think it's maybe happening faster. We're in an era where a word like Riz can go from relative obscurity to becoming the Oxford word of the year in just the space of 1 year. And the internet is compounding that through virality, through how words get popular. And that's something I'm very interested in studying.
How do words get popular? What are the like top ways now?
Yeah. Language has always been kind of like a virus. Words, you know, spread from one host to another, infecting people along social networks. And in a way, like they've always traveled along social networks, following patterns of people who are connected to each other. They start out in like, you know, similar social circles, whether that's with an age or a race or some kind of demographic. But these barriers are kind of broken down a little bit on the internet. So literally, you go viral online. It's like a virus. So it spreads faster along social networks because they're more connected in the age of social media. That's the best analogy I have, I guess.
One of my favorite videos that you did was about the evolving use of LOL and about how it's not like you're not only just breaking down what words mean, but you're breaking down the changes and then also the very subtle ways in which the use of old words suddenly changes. Like a lot of my favorite videos of yours are this word already existed and was used one way, and now it's being used a completely different way. So can you explain that a bit, like even using the what you said about LOL?
Yeah, absolutely. So what we see with LOL, so people don't really use LOL anymore when they're laughing out loud, right? But that was the original usage. I was looking at the story behind LOL. It was used in the 1980s when some guy literally laughed so loudly at his computer that he had to like verbalize that somehow. So he wrote out LOL and people were like, what's that? And he's like, well, I laughed out loud. Similar, you know, with LMAO. That was a more intense version of LOL later on. And now IJBOL, I don't personally use that, but there's other like acronyms, or you could just say I like nose exhaled, and that's somehow funnier than LOL. And that's because this is following the like this historical process of semantic intensification, or like the word itself is becoming less intense and we need to come up with a more intense alternative. And there are like, again, this follows historical patterns. So we saw this with words like very, which comes from verily, which used to mean truthfully. And every time you said very, you actually said truthfully, but people said very so often that it just stopped meaning anything. And we're even seeing the same thing with emojis right now. I mean, the way you laugh online started out as the laughing emoji, then there's the laughing crying emoji, then there's the crying emoji. Now it's the skull emoji if you're laughing online. This is always happening. And it's the same pattern. You can't stop the inexorable march of language change.
I'm curious like how different languages compare to each other, because I know that like there are some words in other languages that we don't even have a word for. Like there's some word that's been going around that's like the equivalent of sort of like bed rotting. That's like they have a word for it. So do you feel like how does English fall in terms of like how descriptive it is, or other languages have like almost better words?
I think each language is very unique because it comes from a particular kind of cultural context and reflects maybe the concerns of that culture. There are like some myths about this kind of stuff, like the Inuit language doesn't actually have 50 words for snow. It doesn't determine, you know, thought as much as people like to think it does. But there are beautiful, nuanced ways you can express yourself in each individual language that you can't in other languages. When a word kind of fills a certain like niche, we call that a lexical gap. So when there's like just a spot in language that is unfulfilled, then there's a lot of lexical gaps. I think German is particularly cool with filling lexical gaps, but that's just because they're good at making like hyper specific words that we would take like maybe a sentence to articulate, but we can still get there in the end. And the way we do get there is also beautiful and nuanced because we can build our sentences in a lot of different ways. So we can still express the concepts. Knowing more languages is great because you can then kind of express it in more ways.
Like Schadenfreude, like using Schadenfreude instead of, you know, we would maybe just say,
right,
I am happy that that person is sad.
Absolutely. I mean, also, we've borrowed Schadenfreude into English. Like we can just say that. So that's another way that we kind of bridge that hurdle. We just borrow the word. It's simple as that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm also curious, like, I feel like we're getting more aware of like ableism in our language and wanting to veer away from certain terminology. But like, for example, I haven't been able to like replace certain phrases.
Yeah.
So like I haven't been able to like replace the idea of like a blind spot, for example. Like,
oh,
do
yeah.
you think
that
there,
that
Yeah.
Right? Like, do you think there will eventually be a replacement that's not as ableist? And like, in the meantime, like, how should people kind of fill that gap to express that idea?
Yeah. I mean, with a word like blind spot, we just don't have a replacement that I can think of, right? So I guess until we come up with more inclusive language, we're kind of stuck with that. But again, this is a historical pattern we've seen play out again and again. It's called the euphemism treadmill. I've also done a video on this, where we start out with a perfectly innocent word meant to categorize people. Like the words idiot, imbecile, moron all used to be like intellectual categorizations. I mean, the medical basis was maybe a little questionable, but they were intended with, I think, the best of intents. Like they were just like trying to categorize people by different intelligence so they can deal with, you know, and treat them accordingly. And then those become pejorative or negative. So people started insulting each other and calling each other idiots because there's that association. And so those terms were later updated with the R word. And then that became negative, right? And then that, you know, became special needs. Now calling someone special is an insult. So this is a pattern that is going to keep playing out because people are going to keep finding ways to turn genuine classifications into insults. It's the treadmill, the euphemism treadmill is going to happen over and over again until we break the cycle by becoming better as a society and not, I don't know. We haven't broken the cycle. So yeah.
It's interesting when that cycle comes back around, like queer. And then we were like, no, you have to say like gay and lesbian. And then people were like, no, we're taking queer back actually. And so now queer is not the wrong word anymore.
Reclamation is so cool. I think maybe that's a better way to address the problem, right? Because the underlying process is going to keep happening. People are going to keep being hateful. But language is also a form of power. And when you reclaim a word, you're reclaiming the power behind that word. So that's getting a little bit more into maybe the philosophy and politics of language. But I think that's definitely a good way to do it. And also the way you can reclaim a word such that only you can use it, like the N-word. That's a beautiful act of reclamation because it turns something so negative into an expression of the individual creativity of marginalized group, because marginalized communities always need to come up with language because language is run by the white, straight, you know, cis norms of language. And when groups differentiate themselves from that, they're able to carve out their own identity, their own linguistic way of expression. The same way, like, the German language has a way to express the concept of Schadenfreude, there's now a way to express queerness in a way that is more inclusive of the community.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a quick break, but stick around.
With Mother's Day around the corner, are you thinking about a truly special gift for your mom? Let me tell you all about MyLifeInABook.com. It's a unique service that turns your mom's life stories into a beautiful book. Pretty cool, right? Here's how it works. Every week, MyLifeInABook.com will send her a question via email. These can be pre-written questions about her life or any custom questions you wish to ask. And then she can either type her response or use their voice-to-text feature. And MyLifeInABook.com compiles all her responses into a beautiful keepsake book. And guess what? They can even create an audiobook using her voice recordings. It's like preserving her voice and her stories for eternity. Imagine discovering stories about her youth, adventures, and the challenges she overcame. This book becomes a legacy, something you and future generations can treasure forever. Your mom's given you a lifetime of stories. This is your chance to give her a way to share them. Right before I found out about this project, my mom made an offhand comment about wanting to write a memoir because she had such a wild childhood and there are all these things she's never really talked to us about. But asking someone to sit down and write a memoir is kind of daunting. So then I got her MyLifeInABook.com, and now she's getting prompts to answer on a weekly basis, and it's a lot easier than just undertaking an entire memoir. I'm so excited to see what my mom does with MyLifeInABook.com because she's someone who doesn't always feel comfortable just sharing about herself, but having these prompts and knowing that I really want to hear her answers is going to inspire her to probably share more with me about her life and her upbringing than I've ever been shared with before. So I'm so excited for that. Check out MyLifeInABook.com and use code JustBetweenUs at checkout for 10% off.
Create an unforgettable gift for your mom this Mother's Day. That's mylifeinabook.com. Use code JUSTBETWEENUS for 10% off today.
Has dealing with stress and trying to get more focused a New Year's resolution you haven't cracked yet or don't really know how to fix? I have a lot of trouble staying focused, and I also get super stressed out, and I think that not being able to stay focused really dovetails with that. So if there was a way for me to keep my focus that didn't also cause my brain to get so scattered with stress, I would love to be able to fix it. I sometimes can't focus on the task at hand because I'm so busy realizing that there are things I need to do on the Just Between Us Instagram account. So I'll be like fully writing something and all of a sudden my brain will go, JBU Instagram, have to post on social media. Truvaga is a handheld product that stimulates the vagus nerve to improve overall health and wellness. Stimulating the vagus nerve with Truvaga helps to balance and strengthen the nervous system, which reduces stress, increases focus, improves mood, and improves sleep. Truvaga is owned by ElectroCore and uses its patented technology for overall health and wellness benefits. Its utilized technology is the most clinically studied and tested vagus nerve therapy available. Customizable sessions are only 2 minutes long. Recommended usage is one session in the morning and one at night. Truvaga comes programmed with 350 sessions, which, if used twice a day, will last approximately 6 months. It's drug-free and easy-to-use therapy to help improve your health. No app or phone is required. We offer free standard shipping, payment plan options, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. It's only available in the U.S. at this time. Visit Truvaga.com, TRUVAGA.com, and enter promo code JUSTBETWEENUS to enhance your wellness journey, support this podcast, and receive $15 off. That's TRUVAGA.com. Check out promo code JUSTBETWEENUS.
Hi, everyone. Allison here. Anyone who knows me well knows that I love to read. I am always looking for new books, and that is why I am so excited that this episode is sponsored by Book of the Month. Book of the Month's mission is to help readers discover new books they love and to promote the work of emerging authors. It was so fun for me to get to pick which book I wanted to read this month and have it shipped right to my door. Book of the Month makes it easy to decide which book to read next. Each month, the editorial team reads through hundreds of new titles. They pick some of the best new books for you to choose from. All the books are good, so you can't go wrong. Every aspect of the Book of the Month experience is designed to be fun and special for readers. They have a highly anticipated release at the beginning of each month. Books are delivered in this really adorable bright blue box, and there's a fun app to help you pick your book and track your reading process. They also offer great values on new release hardcover fiction. It's much cheaper than other options. Shipping is always free, and with a loyalty program, you get rewards and even lower prices the longer you stay as a member. My first book from Book of the Month was The Husbands by Holly Gramazio. I am tearing through this book. It is so fun. It's basically about this woman who one day comes home and there's a husband in her apartment, and she's like, "Where did you come from?" And then she figures out that every time her new husband goes into the attic, a new husband comes out, and she's like shuffling through all these different husbands from the attic trying to figure out which one is the best. It is right up my alley, and I love it so much. So if you want to take part in Book of the Month and have a brand new book shipped right to your door every single month, go to bookofthemonth.com and get your first book for $5 with code PETALS. That's $5 off with code PETALS. I cannot recommend this enough.
Just between us. And we're back.
What are like some of the most fascinating things you feel like you've learned in your journey of studying linguistics?
Man, there's so many cool things. I'm just particularly interested right now in how social media and the structure of social media is changing language. Like, the algorithm itself is driving words. Like, unalive is a crazy word to me. The fact that we have that because you can't say kill on TikTok. And I've talked to thousands of middle school teachers and parents, which is kind of a weird hobby, but they all say that their kids are saying unalive in schools, and they're using it as a euphemism because they're sometimes afraid to talk about death, and this is like a less scary word. And that's another historical trend. We've always had euphemisms for death, right? But they've never emerged in this dystopian context that they have. And we're genuinely, I think, in the next 20 years going to see unalive evolve into a widespread use. Like, there was one teacher I talked to, and their kid used the word unalive in an essay about Hamlet's contemplation of unaliving himself. which
wow,
it's crazy, but it's that's where language is going. That's like it. 100 years from now, we're all going to be dead, and that's going to be okay to use as like a formal replacement of the word kill. Maybe, who knows? Maybe that's the way we're going. Maybe it's not, but it definitely is having an impact how the algorithm is affecting how we speak. And I think that kind of stuff is really crazy to me right now. But there are so many fun facts I could talk about with language.
Please do. How do you decide what to make a video on? Let's say like topics that you're interested in or like something that you find interesting. Like, how are you like, oh, this video is going to do numbers?
I actually still have zero clue when a video is going to do numbers and when it's not. Because I always put the same level of effort into a video. And it's always something I'm excited to talk about. Sometimes they just resonate more. Sometimes they don't. But I just have a really long list of half-baked ideas at any given time. So the thing I mentioned with emojis and the bleaching of emojis, that's like an idea I have in my list right now. Or etymology of yapping or neopronouns or the word companion, which comes from break bread together. So I just have like this is all from my list right here that I have in front of me of like ideas that are just stewing around in my brain. And then eventually I kind of am inspired by, I don't know, maybe this, I can connect this to a modern slang word, or maybe I can, I don't know, explain this in the best possible way. But I like to make like minute long videos, so I need to kind of present a story about a word in that minute. And if I can think about this cool idea I have written down, turn that into a story, a narrative, then I'm able to, yeah, make that into a video.
It's so interesting how people are so interested in it. I think because words are around us all the time and they're always changing, and it's not something that we notice as much. I mean, we notice the big ones, right? Like groovy, or like going into cool in the 80s, and like what words stick around and what don't. Like on fleek was huge, and then now on fleek is done. Or like, you know, I feel like it gives you like a real specific ability sometimes to know what year something's happening. But then the ones that stick around for forever, like cool or stuff like that, is like, it's so interesting to me why those stick. Do you have any concept of like what causes something to have staying power?
Yeah, yeah, that is a crazy question. And there is no like one neat answer I can give you. But there are like a few patterns. For example, they do fill a lexical gap. So, like there needs to be a reason for it to exist. If there's already another word that does the same job just as well, then we're not going to get that word. But if it fills a gap, like I guess there was no... Before cool, there were other ways to express the concept of cool, but it did it in its own unique way with its own unique vibe, maybe. And that's how it stuck. And there is like the transient nature of slang. Like words are fads as well. Words can get popular and then decline, like fleek did. And that has to do with, I think, broader like social trends of like who's using the word. There are ways for words to become like reach widespread use without becoming uncool. But sometimes when your grandma starts using a word, you do not want to start saying fleek anymore if grandma's saying fleek.
Yeah, can you get into a little bit about the like the politics of language and how we often judge people on their language use?
I mean, it sucks because it's like, oh, well, you know, this often happens. We just had a conversation about this where I said something was gay slang, but what it is actually white cis gays taking it from black people. So it's this like appropriative thing where like, oh, if a black person is saying this, it's somehow lower, versus like all of a sudden you've got Jimmy Fallon using the word and everyone's mom is like, we love it.
Right. That's another very common pattern. In fact, the word cool was originally African American English before it just made mainstream, right? Now we don't think about where that comes from. As a linguist, my job and any good linguist's job is to not judge, just describe it as it is. Say it like it is. The way it is that there is constant linguistic appropriation of perceived cooler or funnier demographics because those words then fill a niche in like less marginalized communities who like to use that word to sound cooler or funnier. And the reason a lot of like modern slang, a lot of TikTok slang actually just comes from African American English or queer slang or ballroom slang in particular. There's a lot like slay, serve, yas, queen. All those are, yeah, just ballroom slang in the 1980s and 90s. That's just a historical pattern that's been playing out. Yeah, since words like high five and jazz and like as a society, been taking words from African American English. So unfortunately, like the continuing
like euphemization treadmill that we see with disabled birds. Until we get to the root of the problem, like that's going to keep happening.
Yeah. It's also interesting when words from marginalized groups become more mainstream and then they're just used incorrectly. Like right. A big one that's going on in the queer community now is trade. I don't know if you know what that is. So it started from rough trade, which is a straight man who fucks gay men, or gay men who, like a guy who looks like, oh, I could like maybe try to hit on that guy, but he might beat me up. Like he seems straight.
Right.
Kind of like, or he'll, or the sex we have will be rough or whatever it is. Then it got turned into trade, which is just like a straight guy that you could hook up with or something. And then now in the queer community, it's used as just like any hot guy. It used to then just be any, even a gay guy who's straight passing. Then now it's evolved even further to just any good looking guy. So like on Drag Race, they'll say, ooh, this is the trade of the season. And it'll just be like, and it's a little bit funny. Like they'll be like, it'll be someone kind of effeminate. And that person will be like, am I the trade of the season? But like, then there are guys who are hot and they'll say, oh, that's the trade of the season. And it's like, people are mad now because they're like, that's not even what it means. You don't like new gay kids are coming up thinking trade just means handsome.
Right.
But doesn't it now if the language has evolved?
That's what I'm saying. But it's also like then older gay guys are like, that's not what trade is.
Right.
Like now what's the word for rough trade, you know?
Yeah, well, the older gay guys are going to die out again. And then trade is going to mean like hot guy. And that's actually a really cool process. And it reminds me of the word guy itself, which used to be the name of Guy Fawkes, the guy who tried to blow up Parliament. And then that was brought in to mean like kind of grotesque man. And then that was brought in to mean any man in general. So we see it's called semantic widening when the meaning becomes kind of broader. So trade goes from this hyper-specific definition to, I guess, just what you said, a synonym for hot guy, cute guy.
A handsome guy, a hot guy.
So that's another, like, the historical process is the same as it's always been. And that's really cool to see. In the sense of this happening with marginalized communities, especially when words are appropriated and people lose sense of their origin, this can easily happen. Like the word "giat" comes from an African American English pronunciation of goddamn, and then it was taken, repurposed into Gen Alpha, you know, Rizzler song, sticking out your giat for the Rizzler, and at that point it becomes a noun. And now there are a lot of middle schoolers going around using giat as a noun for butt when that was originally an interjection. So the part of speech changes. At this point, it does mean but. Like, again, as a linguist, I'm just describing the situation as it is. It does mean but, just like trade now also means hot guy. The other definition may still exist. It may even die out. That's just how it is. It's a process that's going to keep happening.
It may die out because the idea of a straight guy who's so self-hating, he has rough sex with a gay guy, might even like loot. It's not like as known of a, people are out, it's more accepted. So like that might even not be like a concept really anymore. Ideally, we don't know.
I was going to say ideally. Right.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, that might
in happen. A better world.
Yeah, there could be some political underlying.
Yeah. Don't they say giat now is like stands for something? Isn't there like a misunderstanding where they think mm-hmm. it stands for mm-hmm. like, got your ass or
girl
something.
Your ass stick or something. Yeah, never yeah, trust yeah, acronym yeah. etymologies. The people, like, this is like their favorite thing to do, to make their so-called backronyms from, or like bae doesn't come from before anyone else. And people have, again, been coming up with fake acronym etymologies for, as like, there's maybe 10 to 15 actual acronym etymologies out there, and the rest of them are all fake. Scuba is real. There's a few other that are real, but in general, I always cringe when I hear that as like an etymologist, because people, I don't know, they like to invent word origin stories that sound convenient, maybe.
Right.
If you want to hear the rest of this episode, and let me tell you, you do, head over to patreon.com/justbetweenus. And for $3 a month, you can get access to all of our podcast episodes in full ad-free. Okay, that's it. Tatalatitu.
Tatalatitu.